Okay. Welcome back, everyone. And I thought of one more response to the question that came up about the sense of mystery, that in whatever happens in life, you could use an affirmation like this, and may I always honor the more, that there's more to this than I imagine. May I always honor the more, the dimension of mystery in me and you, and all this. May I always honor it, even though I don't see it right now. May I always make room for the fact that there's a greater reality in this than I have the senses and intellect to comprehend. Just to say that starts to build your sense of mystery. And it's at the same time, it's true. Secondly, we had the question about if you're in a relationship and the other person is not synchronously working with you on things, then that's the information that you're getting. Oh, I'm in this alone. I am not really with somebody who wants to do the work. Because there are many people who don't even think there is such a thing as work. They just think, oh, yeah, you're together, and that's it. And just behave yourself, and you'll get along with me. That we no longer see it that way. Now we realize that it takes work for any relationship to work, and that the work does pay off. I want to say one more thing about the this whole concept of time, because synchronicity is about how time is not just the passing of hours. And the Greeks had two words for time. Chronos, chronometer is a watch. Chronos is just time that passes. And then there are special moments that happen in the course of life that special times of awakening. They call this Kairos, K-A-I-R-O-S, which also means time, but it's English would be timeliness. So there's time and there's passage of time, and then there's what's timely. And to appreciate how this time works, you would have to have the sense of mystery about the chronos, about the kairos. There's very little mystery about the passing of time. It's minutes, days, hours, so forth. But the kairos, you have no control over. It has to do with timing. And one has to be on tap so that when the timing is right, you seize the opportunity. But to do this, you would have to be okay with the mysterious nature of it all. This poem by Emily Dickinson might help. The name of it is Down Time's Quaint Stream. Down Time's Quaint Stream, without an oar. We are enforced to sail, our port a secret, our perchance a gale. What skipper would incur the risk? What buccaneer would sail without a surety of the wind or schedule of the tides? So the idea of our port is a secret. We don't quite know where we're going, but yet we are on this voyage. So I'm moving along on this voyage, and I don't quite know where I'm going. That's the mystery of it. Okay. Oh, and some people asked about my website is daverico.com. It's on your card also. So let's go on to one more point about synchronicity in relationships. There are some deep longings that have an extended history in the course of our life. We can certainly notice that we've had a longing for something that has to do with love and relationship, and that we're on the lookout for either for the one who will fulfill it, or we're trying to get it from the one we're with. And longings with an enduring history, for instance, as long as I can, this is not me speaking, I'm just using it as an example. As long as I can remember, I have wanted people to be able to hear me, people to be able to get me. So let's say that's the longing. And I am responsive to anyone who seems to get me or hear me. And by the way, this is how we can make big mistakes. Because along comes somebody who seems to be able to hear me, and we think, oh, that's the one for me. But of course, a lot more would have to be in place for it really to work. Anyway, we have some kind of longing that endures. And as in the first poem by Emily, I went abroad, I went out there, looking for the one, looking for the delinquent palaces, looking for the place where there would be someone who could hear me, someone who could get me. And then eventually I realized that I was looking in the opposite direction. How can I hear and get myself? So how can I find a response to the longing in myself? Longing leads me to three questions. The first question is, how can I find some response to the longing, not perfectly responded to, but some, in myself? Am I overlooking three possible sources, resources? Am I overlooking three possible resources that I could go to for a fulfillment of a longing that I have thought all these years could only come from a partner? The first is, am I overlooking how I could find it in myself? Secondly, am I overlooking how this longing, as we said before, is a childhood issue and has its own way of being worked through? And the way is grief, not satisfaction. Oh, I didn't get that. And it just now has to be okay with me. To settle into that response. Would be a wonderful alternative to why didn't they respond as I wanted? Why didn't I get what I needed? We would give up the why. Instead, we would say, oh, yes, this is how it was. I'm sorry it was this way. Could have been worse, could have been better. And it's time for me to feel the grief, let go, and move on. And the third possible resource that I may be overlooking when I bring my longings to someone is, how can I find something of this in a higher power or in spiritual practice? What is the synchronicity? The longing itself, which we took literally as requiring someone to fulfill it, can lead us instead to the three sources of healing. That's the coincidence, that it can lead us to the three sources of healing. Something in me, something to be worked out from childhood, and something in a power beyond myself. So the whole thrust of my purpose in relationship was to find the fulfillment of a long-term longing, but instead it led me, since I was disappointed in finding it in someone, the disappointment became the spur to have me look elsewhere. And instead I looked into three resources. That's the wonderful synchronicity. Because he, she disappointed me, I turned my focus in three new directions. He or she helped me turn, convert, the Latin word for turn, convert myself over to other resources. And these resources, all three, have in common that they don't require another person to be in on it with you. So this is my larger answer to the question that we left off with before. What happens when only one person wants to do the work? This is what can happen. And the wonderful gift dimension in this makes it very appealing. How can I hear myself better, get myself? How can I look into my childhood and get a better sense of how I got to be the person I am now? And no longer hold it against my parents that they didn't get me, but let go of that with the realization that one of the givens of life is sometimes people don't get you and don't hear you. And you can't hate them forever for that. You have to just say, oh, it's like that here on this planet. Some people occasionally hear you and some people often don't hear you. And, oh, I guess I'm going to have to settle into that. And then finally, is there an ear in the universe that somehow does hear, get me? Is there something about being out there with those trees and the way they surround me and the way they arch over me? Is there something about that that has this feeling or could give me the feeling of being held, of being looked at, of being heard? Is there some way I can make that connection? And of course, it is possible. Reminds me of a quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson when he came here to California to visit John Muir. The incommunicable trees persuade us to come and live with them and leave behind our life of solemn trifles. My life in Massachusetts, with all my little concerns. Oh, when I'm here among these redwoods, I get it. There's a bigger reality, and they're trying to persuade me to stay right here with them. Don't go back to your routine. Having that thought shows you that some higher power than ego, doesn't have to be God, be nature, this higher power responds to us in some way. And it's just such a beautiful realization. So I'm using this now as my own practice when I see that I'm carrying around some kind of a need. I will bring it to these three resources. I'll say, okay, David, now how can you somehow find it in yourself? How can you look into your childhood yet again and see what's left that needs to be grieved? And is there a way that you can find it in the Sacred Heart, in the life of Buddha, in the Virgin Mary, in nature, in our true nature, all the possible spiritual resources that you've been introduced to in the course of your life? Can they help you in some way? Does this make sense, everybody? Surely the person, the King David, who wrote, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want," surely what he means is there's some reality that knows just what I need and is giving it to me. I shall not want means I shall not go on being needy. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not go on being needy. There's some higher power, and you don't have to be so literal as he was to think it was Yahweh. It can be any power that's greater than your ego, is somehow holding me in an embrace. And when that happens, I'm not so much at the mercy of my longings. In that moment of feeling held, something happens, and I just feel like I am okay and I am complete. That must be what happened to him when he wrote those first two lines. Everybody following? And it works just as well in Buddhism because we're being held by the bodhisattvas and by Kuan Yin. Okay, questions about this? I consider this the heart of the synchronicity of relationship. How paradoxical it would seem as if longings lead to finding the very partner who fulfills all the longings, as Juliet fulfilled the longings of Romeo and Romeo fulfilled the longings of Juliet. It would seem that that's what it's all about. But for those of us that haven't had that kind of experience recently, now we could open to other resources. And then we could say, oh, so that's what it was all about. Yes. this woman right here.
Which one?
Right here with the green.
Bravo, David.
Thank you. You had a question?
Yes. Can you give me? Can you give us an example of number one with that "hear me, get me" construction? How
yes.
you would find that in yourself?
Yes. How am I listening to my body? How am I noticing where my longings lead me? How am I no longer being afraid of declaring them when I talk to my friends? No longer hiding what my real needs are? How am I even expressing them to others who might fulfill them in some little ways? Mostly, how am I holding them as somehow my responsibility instead of I have to go find somebody who will take care of them for me? It's right there in the poem. A suspicion like a finger. Finger is a good word because finger points to. A suspicion like a finger touches my forehead now and then. So this won't be all the time. It'll be now and then. That I am looking oppositely for the site, S-I-T-E, the place of the kingdom, of the fulfillment, the wholeness. And I can somehow notice that there's something in me that that even gets me, hears me. I know it's hard to get because it seems like hear me is something I would say to someone, and it certainly is something I'd say to someone. But what if I were to make myself the you? You hear me, David, hear yourself. David, get what you're really up to. If I were to occasionally do that now and then I would start to see myself as a resource instead of thinking the only resource is in the special person I have or have not met. Natalie, right here.
So I'm kind of thinking there might be a fourth resource for healing.
Okay,
and it's a little
we
different.
Want as many as possible.
You know, it's a little different, but
okay.
I think it can get you to the same kind of place. And I don't know who coined this phrase, but something called a loving pursuit. So to channel that longing for connection and meaning into another way of finding a way to be devoted and find meaning in your life as a loving pursuit. And it's, you know, it's more external than the ones you've described, but it ultimately, like, would be up to me to create that, whatever that it is, that loving pursuit that gives me that meaning, that brings forth my best self and that sense of devotion that I might otherwise give to a partner.
Okay, that's a very good way to put it. So it'll be like you creating the atmosphere of
the actual endeavor,
Can you give an example of what it would look like?
Well, someone might find a ministry to devote themselves to. That, 'cause, you know, I was reading the other day made the distinction between finding happiness and finding meaning. And current thinking is that finding meaning in your life is actually a more lasting way of having satisfaction in your life. That if you're looking for happiness, you're looking to take things. If you're looking for meaning, you're looking to give. And that it has a more lasting effect on your satisfaction. So finding that pursuit to give to. Does that make sense?
Yes. So you're saying give to others what you were seeking? Is that?
Yeah,
tell me if I have it right.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a paradox, but yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I like that very much. So that is a good one to add. How can I bring this to others? It's sort of like what Mother Teresa would do. She was giving to others, and somehow she received some sense of fulfillment from the giving. So it's like, how can I receive from the giving? So it's receive from giving. Make sense to everybody? Mm-hmm. It's a bit like Gandhi's be the change you want to see happen.
Hi.
Hi.
There seems to be another way.
Okay.
And I think you...
We're going to add to our list.
It could be included in one of these.
Yeah.
Engaging with it. Where the hear me, you would see it objectively, like an other within you.
Yes.
And seeing that other kind of evokes a lot of compassion.
Yes.
And then asking that other, what is it that you want from me?
Mm.
And I think that transcendent function can come mm-hmm. from that.
Very much so. Yeah. Also seeing it as a metaphor. I have a practice in the How to Be Adult in Love. On how to take the longing and turn it into, see it as a metaphor for a larger need. I use the example of sexual fantasies. Let's say you have a sexual fantasy that you know goes all the way back to adolescence or even before, and you've always wanted a certain kind of sexual experience. The essence of synchronicity is that whatever endures, whatever keeps being repeated, must have a bigger meaning than the literal interpretation. So you have a literal fantasy in your mind of what you want someone to do for you sexually or vice versa. You work with that fantasy and open it up to see the metaphorical nature of it, and somehow you realize, oh, I'm not just looking for that particular style of touch. I'm looking for something much bigger and more meaningful. Everybody follow? It's a very interesting way of working. And I'm really glad I got to the point of being able to see it as a kind of practice and express it that way. There's somebody else? Right here. Yeah.
Backing up to the idea of finding a synchronistic relationship that could be either comforting or challenging, but then finding one that's very emotionally challenging that brings up, you know, the healing of the childhood issues. I'd like to think, and I'm hoping, that if it's a growthful process for the one person, it's also a growthful process for the other, so that both people are gaining from this traumatic experience.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
You can't force that to happen, but you're certainly open to it happening. I hope you can jump on this bandwagon with me and get something out of it.
But do both people get something out of it?
Yes, I think both people in the relationship gain every time somebody does some work.
Thank you.
Right.
Hi.
Hi.
You've talked about childhood issues and needs not being met in our childhood.
Along come the very people who remind us of what the needs are. That's the synchronicity, the coincidence of finding just the person who would bring up exactly the issues that you needed to work on and that he or she needed to work on also. That's why relationship is such an example of synchronicity. And I'm going to go on to talk about the endings of relationship and how that has to do with synchronicity also.
Yeah. Yeah. So my question is, what happens when that issue is not yours but your parents, because their needs were not met in their childhood, but yet that's affecting your life right now in the present?
It's usually about that. It's usually passed on generation to generation. Like, you could draw a picture or get an understanding of what your mother's life must have been like by the way she treated you. Because we just keep repeating the past until we have completed it. How do we complete it? We address, finally, we look at it without blame. Just look at it directly, squarely, address it. We explore all the feelings and so forth that go with it. And then we keep doing that, which includes grieving for the unmet needs that we instinctively knew they were here to fulfill, but because of their own inadequacies, they could not. And then finally, we come to a sense of completion when we say, well, it's no longer their fault. Now it's my responsibility. That's the turning point that makes you an adult. They're still accountable for all the neglect, abuse, and mismanagement. But we're no longer holding it against them. We're no longer concentrating on how much at fault they were. We have come to the point of saying, but now it's mine. And where do I go from here? Just as it was theirs when they looked at how their parents were toward them. So how do you move to the new generation, the way of being a true adult? You let go of the blame while maintaining the sense of their accountability. But now their sense of accountability does not come with the sense of how they owe you something. They no longer owe. Now it's just information. Oh, they were like that. And I have cried my eyes out, and there are no tears left about it. There's just a kind of equanimity that I have accepted that this was my story. And all that matters now is, where do I go from here to be the most loving person I can be, so that everything that now happens becomes an opportunity to give and receive love without reserve. They're not stopping me from doing this. So that's how you're finally free of them. Right here, and then... So we'll have two more questions, and then I want to go on.
Hi. One concept I've been thinking about is when you're doing the work in a relationship and when it gets to a point where it's very painful, like when do you say, okay, that's not good for me in the self-care aspect of it? I struggle between like, oh, but we're both doing the work to I'm miserable and unhappy.
So that would be the She's bringing up the topic of when it becomes clear that something isn't working, is there a where do I go from here in us? Or are we so caught in the old style of just stay with it? Just keep your chin up. Keep a stiff upper lip, which of course is the opposite of the grief, because in the grief your lips quiver. So the one who said keep a stiff upper lip was saying don't grieve. Don't go into your real feelings. That's what they're actually saying. So when you let go of that and you just go into the actual feelings, the grief of how it didn't work, when you really go into it and stay with it, opens up the door to the next step. And you'll just know automatically it's going to be to separate or make a big change or find the kind of therapy that really helps. You know, it's whatever takes you to the next step. But the one thing that is unacceptable will be just to keep putting up with it. So something shifts inside, and you're just no longer going to put up with unhappiness. Or a relationship that isn't going anywhere, or that gets more and more alienated. And you're saying, something has to shift. I saw this English independent movie, but I don't remember the name of it. Anyway, it was about a couple, and the man was very cold toward the woman, and we could see that it wasn't a good relationship, and we could also see that her needs were certainly not being fulfilled. And also the we're going for, you know, months on end with no sex. And I'll never forget the very last scene of the film. They're sitting up, we're looking straight ahead at them, sitting up in bed. And he's reading a book. She says, oh, what book is that? He says, it's a book on what life was like before there were people. So she says some smart alecky thing like, oh, well, that's understandable, you'd be reading that. Anyway, they kind of argue, and the last sentence was wonderful because they're kind of looking at us, and he says, well, what do you want anyway? And she says, I want sex, love, and children. And I thought, oh, she finally said it. And, you know, that was the end. And he's looking at her with shock. But, you know, when you finally get to that point where you just come right out and say it, and then when you get the answer of shock instead of, oh, okay, yeah, let's go there. Then you know it's time for a change. We had one more over here, and then we'll go on. Suzanne.
Yeah. Hi. I was wondering are you familiar with Henry Corbin?
Yeah, I've heard some of his work. Yes.
I was wondering if it's possible to speak a little bit. I've been reading and working with some of his ideas, and this idea of using the imagination, and it seems to me that in my life experience that grief is a continuum. never goes away. It never stops. It's always there. And it seems to be, that's it. So, I know. So this possibilities of opening to the grief as a mechanism to heal and to self-grow
mm-hmm.
towards well-being and happiness, looking towards self instead of other to heal the wounds,
mm-hmm.
nurture the wounds.
Yes.
This imagination seems to be almost like a physical component of the process. I don't remember if it was Jung, that imagination as an organ.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if you could speak to a little mm-hmm. bit about that.
Well, first of all, she's pointing out that, as we said before, that grief is a lifelong process. And that these things that happen to us sometimes have an element of inconsolability. This is an important thing to recognize, because we might imagine that, well, everything is supposed to be addressed, processed, and resolved. And that is losing the sense of the mystery of human experience, because there are some things that don't get resolved. They remain as sources of grief always, like the death of a child or horrible abuse. So it's inconsolable. And that, too, has to come to the yes to one of the givens of my life. Not yes, I welcome that. That'll take a lot, even though that would be useful. But yes, that's the way it is. So that's one part of the response. And now I'm thinking of another poem. And notice how in this one, she, Emily Dickinson, the name of this one is It Ceased to Hurt Me. And notice how, I want you to notice the ending. A string of spools refers to a custom I remember in my childhood. When women did more sewing, there were empty wooden spools left after the use of all the thread. And we used to paint those and string them together and make like a Christmas tree decoration. Okay? That's a string of spools. It ceased to hurt me, though so slow. I could not feel the anguish go, but only knew by looking back that something had benumbed the track. Nor when it altered, I could say, for I had worn it every day, as constant as the childish frock I hung upon the peg at night. Nor what consoled it I could guess, except, whereas 'twas wilderness, it's better, almost peace. Almost peace? To say almost. Something about it? But not the grief, that nestled close. So the grief had an element of inconsolability. Now I realize the Spring of Spools is from another poem. So forget that. But maybe I'll recite that one too later. But anyway, that this... This there's something that the best you get is almost. she's way too realistic to say, oh, it's all taken care of. So she'll only go this far. It used to be a wilderness. It used to be horrible, chaotic, crazy. And now it's almost peace. And a lot of us have felt this. So I wanted to bring this in. Well, I guess this would be a good time to take... I want to go into this next topic, but maybe this will be a good time to take our break. So we'll take a 10-minute break and come back. 3 o'clock. Yeah.
I didn't get what you...
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.